This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Straight Fire, 100th episode today. Yes, today. Thank you for joining me, Jason McIntyre. Tuesday, December 29th, a fun night in the sports world, unless you're a Memphis Grizzlies fan. The Ja Morant ankle injury does not look good. But, we had much bigger news in the NFL. Obviously, I've got to tease our guest coming up very shortly, the great Joy Taylor from FS1. You see her on Colin Cowherd's show. She worked with Skip Bayless on Undisputed. She's taking over sports media in 2021. She's a Miami Heat fan and got to see LeBron and the Heatles. So we'll do a lot with Joy later in the podcast. But first, we've got to start with what clearly is the biggest sports story today, and that is the end of Cam Newton. It's over, folks. Cam Newton has had a great NFL career. He won an MVP award. He took the Carolina Panthers to the Super Bowl. And folks, I think that's a wrap for Cam Newton. It appears over for him. He was benched for ineffectiveness in a Monday Night Football bloodbath. The Patriots get destroyed by the Bills. Cam, an anemic 5-for-10 passing for 34 yards. That's just not going to cut it in a passing league that is the NFL right now. And folks, the rough story with Cam is he's turning 32 in May. This is a guy who had a chance to come back, right? Josh McDaniels, Bill Belichick. Come on, Cam, we got this. And 5 touchdown passes, 10 interceptions. It's over for Cam. He was the number one pick in the league in 2011, and I cannot see any team taking a chance on Cam Newton next year. He's not going to want to come in and be a backup. That's not what former MVPs tend to do. It's just not a good situation for Cam. The running, you know, he could be a battering ram when you want. He was very effective running the football early in the season. 2 touchdowns in the opener, then 2 more against Seattle. Cam looked like a quarterback in that game against Seattle. Who could forget that one? Sunday Night Football, great game. He passed for 397 yards. Since then, he has topped 200 yards passing 3 times. He's just not a throwing quarterback. He's not remotely accurate enough. I know Cam defenders are going to say, well, he didn't have wide receivers. Okay, that's fair. He didn't have a tight end. I got it. But you watch Cam move. You watch him in the pocket. He's not the guy he was. The guy had, he ate 26 sacks. He had a quarterback rating of under 45 this season. He's not the dropback passer he was when he came into the league. And it stinks because Cam had a great run. Is he a Hall of Famer? That's a debate for another day. I don't know how many MVP quarterbacks are out of the Hall of Fame. But, you know, Cam Newton, the end came pretty quick and swift. Bill Belichick is realizing what it's like on the other side. As a guy who's been a Jets fan for 3 decades, I know what it's like without a franchise quarterback. It sucks. And Bill Belichick is finding out just how unfortunate that life is. Because, folks, Jarrett Stidham ain't it. Belichick has to make a move this offseason on an NFL franchise quarterback. I see 2 potential options. 1, the guy he drafted, Jimmy Garoppolo. Looks like his time in San Francisco is probably going to be ending. Kyle Shanahan giving everybody a shot now. CJ Beathard had a nice performance. Shanahan is such a good offensive mind. You feel like just about anybody he puts in there can give them a chance to win. Within reason, of course. Like Nick Mullins, as good of a backup as he is, he's not taking him to the playoffs. CJ Beathard, solid backup. Again, not taking him to the playoffs. You wonder, does Kyle Shanahan make a move on a guy like Sam Darnold? Sam Darnold will have a market. I can't see Shanahan and the Niners going after Carson Wentz. That's going to be too rich for their blood. But it feels like Garoppolo probably lands in New England again. I would say the other option, if Garoppolo stays in San Fran, would probably be Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota, this guy was a number 2 overall pick. He definitely has the legs and the arm, as we saw on Thursday Night Football 2 weeks ago for the Raiders. Now, I know the Chargers weren't remotely ready for Mariota, but he's still under 30. This is a young guy. Mariota did take Tennessee to the playoffs. He kind of got a raw deal in that they had, I think it was 4 offensive coordinators in 5 years. And I guess what really hurts him is how quickly Ryan Tannehill looked awesome in that Tennessee system. And Mariota probably gets another shot as a starter, maybe with the Patriots. I don't know. Bill Belichick has a very difficult offseason ahead. This guy's pushing 70 here. You know, Belichick ain't going to want to draft some guy, and say, oh, we got a three-year project. That doesn't seem like something Belichick would do. He's a very prideful man, so I cannot imagine him walking away like this. But Rob G., I got to say, watching Cam Newton on Monday Night Football, he's shot. It's over. All right, so from Cam Newton and the disappointing Patriots, you've got to look at the Buffalo Bills, folks. I said this on Monday's podcast. That is the team that scares me if I'm the Kansas City Chiefs. They've already beaten the Bills once. The Bills are going to be hungry to come back and defeat them. And it's Brian Daboll. I know the New York Jets are in need of a head coach, and they suddenly have fallen down the list of, hey, do you want to come and coach us now that they don't have Trevor Lawrence? I think, without question, Jacksonville is extremely attractive. I think Justin Herbert and the Chargers are incredibly attractive. And I don't know if the Jets are a better option than Deshaun Watson and the Texans. The problem with the Texans is their salary cap is shot to hell. There's very little talent around Deshaun Watson. He does make everyone better, but the defense is an absolute train wreck. And that J.J. Watt speech that went viral on Sunday night, you know, folks, he was probably talking about a few players on that Texans team, and that has not got to be something that I'm looking to jump into if I'm a head coach. Like, sure, you could just say, well, weed those guys out, but what if there's some good players in there that are maybe cornerstones or that you've built around or that you're committed to financially? Like, I personally don't think the Texans is attractive. I think no doubt the Jets are more attractive. But if I'm the Buffalo Bills, I don't know how I can hold on to Brian Daboll. Like, he is calling games at a masterful level. Every offensive series, they're doing something different, doing something dynamic. I think their GM probably gets a look for executive of the year, bringing in Stephon Diggs. Like, hello. I mean, it's a layup of a decision, folks. We're seeing this over and over in the NFL. Got a rookie quarterback on the rookie contract. Go get you a wide receiver. I've probably said this every month on the podcast. Cardinals go out and get Nuke Hopkins. Well, they need another one now. They need to go add another wide receiver. Christian Kirk, I don't know if he's the guy. But the Buffalo Bills, between Cole Beasley, John Brown, who they just activated off IR, Stephon Diggs, this is an offense that's going to give some people trouble. And again, not to revisit in that Bills-Chiefs game again too deep, but it was in the rain. The inclement weather. Now maybe we see that in Kansas City in January, and the Bills run into it again. But I'm not betting against Brian Daboll right now. That offensive, the schemes that they are running are incredible. Folks just running free everywhere in the secondary. It's incredible. Run game's not awful. Like, this is a pretty balanced team. If they could get the defense, say, 25% better than it was at the midway part of the season, and they have gotten healthier with their great linebacker, Milano. I mean, he's not great. A very good linebacker. There's still a lot of talent. Two good safeties. Tre'Davious White, very good at the corner. This is a Super Bowl contender. I firmly believe the Buffalo Bills can be a major threat to the Chiefs. I mean, if I had to guess the line right now, AFC title game, assuming everybody healthy, what are we looking at? 4.5? Kansas City 4.5? I don't think you can make it something like 6. I just don't. We've seen the Chiefs struggle. I guess we got to see what they do in the first the games leading up to that. But this is a Kansas City team right now. I spelled it out Monday. I'm not going to go into it again. Some troubling signs, certainly, for the Kansas City Chiefs. But full steam ahead for the Buffalo Bills. Just a phenomenal story how quickly they turned it around. And I want to quickly touch on one other NFL story before we get to Joy Taylor. Dwayne Haskins of the Washington Football Club was released on Monday. And I know I saw some of your comments on social media. Jason, you were a little hard on Haskins on Talk the Line Sunday. And I repeated the joke here that Haskins was about as reliable as Wi-Fi in a parking garage. And people thought I was beating up on the guy. He's a young quarterback. And folks, the Washington Football Club started him on Sunday. Less than 24 hours later, they cut his ass. What does that tell you about Haskins? Now, I know Rivera didn't draft him. He wasn't here. That was a previous regime. But to go from starter to not even backup, but to inactive to know what, you know what, we just got to get him out of here. To cutting him? Like, really? And I started to look at it. And you never want to draw silly parallels. I'm not comparing him to Justin Fields, the Ohio State quarterback right now, who's coming out and is going to be a high pick, top 10 pick for sure, maybe two. But these Ohio State kids are surrounded by five-star talent. Everywhere you turn, you've got a five-star recruit. You're handing the ball off or throwing to them. I looked at it when Haskins, I believe, threw 50 touchdowns. He was throwing to Terry McLaurin and a kid named Hill, and Olave, their star receiver now, was a young kid. And he was handing off to J.K. Dobbins. So all you got is NFL talent around you. Yeah, you're going to look good. Do you know how to read a defense? Apparently not for Haskins. Do you know how to be a professional? Like in the locker room, outside of the locker room, with the fans. Like making smart decisions. Like that stuff matters. And then some people pointed out to me like, hey, when was the last Ohio State quarterback to crush it in the NFL? You know, the whole crickets noise. Braxton Miller pivoted to like return man. Cardale Jones, who looked kind of awesome, just fell off the map. I don't even know if he's still in the league. Might be on a practice squad somewhere. And Justin Fields was not an Ohio State guy because he started out at Georgia. And he's real talented. I'm not lumping him in or comparing him to Haskins. I'm just pointing out he's surrounded by talent. And what happened when his star receiver was out in the Big Ten championship game? Well, he looked very ordinary. He completed like 50% of his passes. Did not look like an NFL number two overall pick, that's for sure. And I need to see what he's got against Clemson. He basically, in the Big Ten title game, turned and handed off to the running back who had like 300 yards on the ground. So I'm not out on Fields. I'm just saying this Haskins thing can be a warning sign about doing extra homework on some of these quarterbacks, especially the ones coming from the big-time star programs. And no, Trevor Lawrence is not one of those guys. Deshaun Watson went to Clemson, big-time star. Like, the DNA is there for Lawrence to become a superstar. We'll see about Justin Fields. All right, let's get to Joy Taylor for a fun interview.
You know a guy. Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, so for the 100th episode of Straight Fire, we thought we'd get a special guest, somebody I know really well, very cool. We started at FS1 right around the same time. I see her all the time. She's a huge deal at FS1 on Instagram. Oh my gosh. She's like majorly famous. Joy Taylor. Joy, how are you?
What's up? That's an intro. I'm honored I'm on the 100th episode, though. That's cool.
We thought we'd bring in a special guest because I've known you for a while and your sports takes are always spicy. And listen, there's a lot happening right now in Miami sports with the Heat and the Dolphins, which we'll get to. First of all, I just want to ask, like, you know, here we are right around the holidays and the weather in LA sucks right now. I know we shouldn't be complaining, first world problems, but like, you know, the pandemic blows, like this has been kind of a crappy year for just about everybody. I just want to, as a sports fan, as a sports media person, how do you sum up how you've handled it? Like, I mean, it's been a tough one for all of us.
It's been really crazy, but I have to say, I really can't complain other than the, you know, obvious weighted anxiety of navigating a world where there's a deadly virus going around. You know, I never stopped working. We always kept doing the show. We have sports back. It was a little dicey there for a couple months without sports, but, you know, we managed through with The Last Dance and the match and, you know, NFL offseason. So we made it happen. But, you know, I consider myself very, very fortunate this year. So I really can't complain. I'm really, really grateful that the leagues were able to get it together and get sports back on and up and rolling. I think we can all in the business be happy for that. Yeah. And I also think it's just it's been one of those years where, like, I'm just really impressed by a lot of people. As disappointed as I am in so many people, I'm also really impressed. Like, I think that the leagues have done such an incredible job getting sports back. Like, I don't know if people, you know, depending on what your job is, if you have an understanding of what COVID protocols are, because not every workplace has extreme COVID protocols. I mean, we get tested every other day. And we have a bunch of protocols in place, but these leagues have crazy setups and just the medical people that have to be around and testing everybody every day and paying attention to the contact tracing and just the bubble in itself has really just really astounded me. Like, I think the commissioners catch a lot of hell, but man, like, so impressed with what they've been able to do. Like, I know I'm nerding out right now, but just when people pull off really amazing logistical things in crisis, I'm very impressed by them. And when the stakes were as high as they were, with, you know, billions of dollars on the line and thousands of jobs when it comes to sports, I'm really impressed. So I feel really lucky, and, like, you know, I'm just navigating this whole crazy world like everybody else, but I also am just really grateful sports are back.
I guess I'll ask about a team that I'm sure gave you a lot of excitement during, you know, COVID in the summer. It was the Miami Heat, a surprise trip to the finals. And I'm a little down on the Heat this year. I think they exceeded expectations. I don't think they'll be like a top three or four seed in the East. But I got to ask, Joy, like, you know, we had Brian Windhorst on last week and he was talking about James Harden, and the Heat are certainly an option. Where are you on, would you want James Harden in Miami?
I try to be measured, because, like, if Harden does end up in Miami, I'm going to be excited just because it's James Harden. And no matter what any of us say, he's still a top 10 player in the league. But I don't know that it's, well, first of all, I don't think it's a long-term fit at all.
Yeah.
And I don't think people, like, you know, Miami, South Beach, it has this reputation of, like, being a place where people, and it's just wild, right? And it is, of course. But the Heat actually are very much not that.
Yeah.
And they're kind of actually a really good representation of what the whole of that area is. You know, when people think of Miami, they think of South Beach, they think of Live and 11 and, you know, just craziness and topless beaches and whatever. But the whole city is actually made up of, you know, obviously it's a very international city, like, hardworking people. Everybody doesn't live on South Beach. You know, there's plenty of normal people there, like, believe in hard work. And that's what Pat Riley is. And that's how he runs that organization. And obviously Spoelstra is the same way. And you can't really play for the Heat if you're not an extremely hardworking individual. Part of the reason why they were able to go as far in the bubble as they were is because they're a very strong defensive team. But they also practice really hard. So they just have more wins than everybody else. Like, they're just tougher than everybody else. And that's a mental thing and a physical thing. Like, I really think, like, that run to, and you could see it in Jimmy Butler. Like, he poured his heart and soul into that. He dragged them through those finals. And that's part of the reason why, I don't have them as high this year. Yeah. Because I think that took a lot out of the Heat. And while everyone's talking about, you know, the short amount of time the Lakers have had to come back, the Heat have too. And they don't, you know, I mean, they were not on the winning end of that. So I would be happy to have James Harden, but I don't know that it would work. And I honestly don't know that Pat Riley is going to leverage the organization on a gamble like that. Now, that being said, I think that the only team to beat in the East is the Nets. I'm not high on Giannis and the Bucks anymore. I've done that. I'm over it. They can't even get to the NBA finals. So I'll give them respect when they've earned it. They haven't. And the Celtics are the same to me. They don't have enough. No, obviously the Nets haven't proven anything either, but we can still live off the dreams of Kyrie being healthy for an entire season and KD getting back to KD form, which, you know, through very short sample size, it looks like they are. So if they can stay healthy throughout the season, they're going to be a real problem. Like, let's not forget, Kyrie is a champion. KD is a champion. Their coach you know, by a guy that knows about winning too. So I really think they are the team to beat in the East. I'm not paying attention to those other guys until they prove it.
I do wonder, and yeah, the Nets are stacked, but so Joy, we saw James Harden run the show in Houston, right? Got to do whatever he wanted. It didn't work with Chris Paul. It didn't work with Russell Westbrook. And then we just saw the Clippers last year, Paul George and Kawhi kind of got to dictate everything there when practices. And I just kind of wonder, KD and Kyrie, you know, Monday night, they decided, hey, we're taking the night off. We're coming off injuries. We're not going to do back-to-backs. Like, how is that going to work in an organization where, you know, some of those guys were there before they got there? I don't know if that works in the NBA outside of a guy like LeBron James, who, you know, is one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I think it's a great grand experiment because all the critiques of the Nets so far are fair. I just think that if they can manage to not let it fall off the rails like the Clippers did, then I think they'll win the East. I don't think they'll win the championship this year, but I do think that they'll come out of the East. And to your point about the Clippers, we have to remember that there was a bubble, right? And that was like an added extreme amount of pressure on everyone there. Being away from their families, it's basketball 24/7. Like, it's going to be a little bit different this year because they aren't in a bubble. So I think that will factor in, but I'm with you. I think it's fair. I just think if they can figure it out, I don't know how they're going to be who's going to be able to score like that.
So I mentioned LeBron, and I think we both got to FS1 around 2016, and you were in Miami previously, so you got to see LeBron and the Heatles, right, up close. Now you're seeing LeBron with the Lakers up close. Joy, I mean, a lot of jealous NBA fans of you right now. Can you compare the two? I mean, again, it's difficult right now given the pandemic, and we didn't get to see it up close. But I know you were at some of the games here the last 2 years with LeBron, and I'm sure you saw the Heatles up close.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's going to sound like Heat fan bias here, but there's really not a whole lot that I can compare to what that environment was with the Heat in Miami, especially like the first 3 years. They were the most hated team in the world. Like, everyone hated the Heat. Everyone hated LeBron, and they were just the ultimate villains. And it was kind of ironic because everyone really likes Dwayne Wade and everyone really likes Chris Bosh. Like, they had, everyone likes Shane Battier. Like, they had Ray Allen. Like, who hates these guys? Nobody. Now, it's not like these were traditional villains in the league. It's just that move with LeBron and the decision just turned him into this villain. So the environments, like the fans, the buzz around that team was so insane. I don't know that I can compare it to any other place that LeBron has been. Like, when he went back to Cleveland, it was all like lovey-dovey, you know, welcome home, you know, sweetness. And now that he's with LA, like, LA fans, I mean, he won the championship now, but LA fans were not that high. As crazy as it sounds, they weren't loving this LeBron situation, especially because LeBron came in, you know, as the king, and the LA fans are like, wait a minute. Like, we got Kobe, we got Kareem, we got Magic. Like, you got some winning to do before you come in here and, you know, start claiming a Laker. Like, we do winning around here, even though the team had obviously been dysfunctional for years. So yeah, I've been to some games, but it's just, there was a real animosity that you could feel in the air around that Heat team. But I also will say, like, now it's kind of hard to say what it would be this year, especially after coming off a championship, because COVID is just, you know, you can't gauge what the reaction would be.
Let's pivot over to the NFL. And, you know, Joy, it's like you had a good run with the Miami Heat and now your Dolphins are surging. As a Jets fan, I have to say it annoys me greatly. the Dolphins are good, but at least the Patriots stink. I guess I'll start with Tua and Ryan Fitzpatrick. So I don't know if you watched the Saturday night game, Raiders, Dolphins. I personally don't see how after that and the other Fitzpatrick bailout game we saw earlier this year, how Brian Flores can start Tua this week and have any confidence starting Tua in the playoff game should they get there. What's going on in that locker room? What's your best guess, having spent a lot of time in Miami?
I think if it was any other coach and if it was any other rookie and anyone other than Ryan Fitzpatrick, it wouldn't work. But I think from what I'm hearing, Brian Flores is a great communicator and he's been very transparent about everything. And he's very upfront with the guys. Tua has the kind of personality. He's like a very humble kid. I think that the injury probably played a role in, like, you know, let me take a lot of value and appreciation in this game that I'm playing every day. Cause you know, at any moment it could be taken away. And Fitzpatrick is playing with house money. I mean, he's in year 17 and he's like, you know what I mean? In a great situation for his career. So I think it's just kind of like the perfect concoction for this. Now, I don't really know that I love it. I kind of would rather just let Tua fail because they're not a Super Bowl team this year. So I don't hate the idea of Tua just working through these bumps on his own. I loved switching to him as a starter. I thought it was the right time to do it. And I thought it was the right move because you have to see what you have in Tua sooner than later. I mean, you just can't, you can't let rookies sit for too long. Like the Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes situation, everyone's like chasing that and everyone's chasing the Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers situation. And that's really cute, but that's Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. And they're two all-time talents who will never be duplicated. So I don't like the idea of like structuring everything like that. Sharks are born swimming. Like, I think you learn football by playing football, but it's working for Brian Flores, and I trust that he knows what he's doing. I think that it's kind of weird. I don't like quarterback by committee, but yeah, they're kind of doing it in New Orleans, so it's not really like that crazy. If it gets them the wins, and I also look at it this way, it's kind of similar to what happened in Washington this week. Like, even if you don't like the situation, and it's obviously for completely different reasons, but even if you don't like the situation, you do have a responsibility to the rest of the guys on the team who are going out there busting their ass to put the guy who you feel is going to put us in the best situation to win the game. You owe it to the rest of the guys too. And if that means you got to sit to it for, you know, a quarter or whatever, and Fitzpatrick goes out there and finishes the game, that's what you got to do. But I will say about in that game in particular, like, the Dolphins didn't win that game. The Raiders blew it. The Raiders blew that game. Fitzpatrick made an unbelievable play and got it down to whatever it was. The would have been like a 66-yard kick. If they didn't have that face mask to add the extra 15 yards and put them in field goal range, they probably don't win that game. So the Raiders blew that game, even with Fitzpatrick going out there and doing that.
So let me ask you from this point of view, Joy. So you played a lot of sports, right? I know you were a big-time athlete, and I know you still play some sports out here in L.A. I think boxing maybe I've seen you do. But as part of a team, Joy, like, if it's 10-0 Buffalo this week in week 17, are the players starting to look over to Flores? All right, let's get Fitz in there. Come on, time, comeback time. Like, if Tua has a couple 3-and-outs or 2 bad turnovers, like, you just play with a different mindset knowing that at any moment you're going to be pulled for the backup. I don't know if that is a winning solution this year.
Yeah, I don't love it. Like, I'd rather Tua just go out there and just lose the game. Yeah. Like, if he's going to start, I'd rather him just go out there and lose it and learn the lessons from losing. But, you know, like I said, I think Flores feels like he has a responsibility to the rest of the team to put them in the best situation to win, and not it just be, you know, Tua learning on the job. I don't think this will happen next year. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I do think it does something to you psychologically to know that at any time the backup could come in. But I also I don't know. I really don't have a strong feeling either way because I really trust Brian Flores. I think if it was anyone else, I would hate it. But because it's Brian Flores, I'm going to trust him.
So in addition to, you know, Joy, the NFL, you know, We have many jobs now in sports media. Like, you can't just have one job, right? So you do the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, FS1, and you started doing an Amazon live stream with Daniel Jeremiah, friend of the podcast, and Bucky Brooks, also a buddy of mine. I want to ask how that experience has been and kind of where you see this maybe headed in the future as people you know, kind of step away from cable TV and head towards streaming?
As far as like working multiple things?
Well, that and then specifically Amazon, how has that been for you?
Oh, Amazon's been amazing. I mean, as you said, DJ's a friend and Bucky is great too. Like they're two just amazing talents to work with, and they were scouts. So they just see the game so differently. So it's just fun to like pick their brain and, you know, you see a guy like doing great and, you know, check what they said about him coming into the draft. And so it's been amazing. But yeah, I think that the whole business is changing. It is changing quickly because everyone is on their phones. And like, I always ask people, I'm like, what do your kids do? Like, what do your kids do? Like, as soon as you ask, that's the same reaction. Like, kids are on their phones, or on their iPads. Yeah. Like, that's where it's going. And pretty soon, they're not going to be kids anymore. They're going to be adults, like, within very quickly, within, like, 6 years, which to us as adults, like, our lives aren't going to change that much. You know, once you get to a certain part of your life, like, 6 years is not really that different than, you know, the time that you're 14 to the time that you're 21 is a big difference, you know.
Yeah.
34 to 42, you're kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're set a little more set in your ways. So, yeah, I mean, I think everything is going digital, and it's just going to be on networks and on us as talent to kind of stay ahead of the game and pivot a lot. And I think 2020 has been a good example of, like, you know, how quickly that can happen and how creative people can be. You know, I mean, I always did the podcast in studio at FS1, and pretty much all year I've done the podcast from home. And it's, yeah, you know, like, you're doing the same thing. Everyone's pretty much working from home. We're doing radio shows from home. Even on The Herd, we almost never had guests that weren't in studio. I mean, that, like, we always had guests that were in studio. We almost never had people on remote. Now everybody's got to be a call-in or a video call-in. And it's just expanded how many people we can have on and how often we can have people on because they don't have to fly in. Like, it's just totally changed how we produce the show. So digital is changing everything. Streaming is changing everything, but I think it's a good thing. And the one thing I'll say about sports, is sports and politics are the last live things you have to watch. Like, you have to watch this stuff live. You can't record it. You can't binge it. You're not going to binge the Patriots season. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to watch this game live. And that offers a wide opportunity for us as talent and as for networks to cover it. And there's just more and more coverage of sports. There's a higher demand for sports content, for leagues, because this is live. And you know, you're going to reach consumers. Advertisers know they're going to reach consumers when they're taking part in a live sporting event. That just opens things up completely, because as we know, everybody watches on demand stuff now.
Yeah, I kind of grew up in the cable, you know, situation where you're watching cable TV. And I still, my habit, Joy, is I come in the room and I'll just flip on the TV. It's kind of on background noise. You know, if I find an old episode of Growing Pains or, you know, some movie that I've seen 73 times is on, Dazed and Confused, yeah, I'll put it on in the background. But with streaming, it's, I don't do the same thing. I don't just like sift through and look for something. I go on there to find something specific, right? What are your TV habits like?
Yeah, I'm with you kind of the same way. Like, you just come home and just put something on just to have the TV on, right? That's
right.
That's how we always used to do. Now, because I watch so much sports, you know, if like I'm not watching NFL and there's an NBA game on or a baseball game or whatever, I'm very specific with what kind of other content I watch, because I also have, you know, social media. Like, I feel like I'm always in front of a screen.
Yeah.
I'm like more of a scripted TV show person.
Yeah.
I really like a really well-written show. Like, I just finished Schitt's Creek. I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. You know, I love a good scripted show. Why is it slipping my mind right now? The Upside Down. What is it?
Which show?
Stranger Things.
Like, oh, Stranger I haven't Things. Seen that. Now, what? Is that kid appropriate or no?
Oh yeah, totally. Totally kid appropriate.
Okay. Yeah. We're trying to get the kids right now into Mandalorian. I've seen the first season and they're catching up. Initially they were like, I don't know. And then, of course, they're like, oh, my gosh, it's amazing. Yeah, yeah. So have you seen that?
Yeah, I literally just started The Mandalorian last night, and I'm episodes in already. Yeah, so that's kind of my, like, habits. If I'm not watching sports, I like to pick a really good scripted show to get through.
All right, so we'll get you out of here on this one. What do you think? Give me one big sports surprise for 2021. It could be any sport. Obviously, NFL, NBA, a little more exciting. Big surprise.
Well, I don't know if it's really going to be a surprise, but I do think they're going to expand the college football playoff next year.
Ooh, I like that.
And
I love that.
I've thought a lot about this because, as you know, Colin and I talk a lot of college football on the show.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, yeah, I mean, it's just going to be more blowouts. And like, how is that good for anyone? And then I was thinking about it this week, because this weekend in the NFL is essentially a bonus wild card weekend. I mean, yeah, there's so many win or go home games this weekend for the playoffs. Like, there's so much on the line this weekend in week 17. There's so many teams who don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. They need other people to win or lose to make the playoffs. So it's just such a huge, massive weekend in the NFL. And it gives so many fan bases hope. And you don't have that in college. Yeah. It feels so closed door to a couple schools. Even if you have a great season, you have no chance of making it into the playoff. And I know that expanding it to 8 teams isn't really going to appease everybody, but I do think it will open it enough that it'll stop the widespread complaining. And it will also just give just enough hope to those schools that it actually validates you having a good season. Because right now, there's all these ridiculous bowl games, which we all know don't matter. Like, it's fun and it's nice and they're competitive, but at the end of the day, you're not going to win a championship if you win this game. So I think expanding it to 8 teams, while I still think there's going to be massive blowouts, at least it gives teams hope. And who knows? Like, maybe you do have a miracle run. You know, that's what makes March Madness so fun. We know these like low-seeded teams have no chance of winning the championship, right, but maybe one of them can go on a run and then we all get so invested.
Yes.
And it's fun and they have hope, and like, hope sells. So negativity sells, but so does hope. And I think that the college football expanding, while it will mostly be for money, who cares? Everything's done for money. I do think it will actually open up the sport. And in a sport that is like really Southern and is not that interesting to the casual fan because their teams have no chance of getting into the championship throughout the year, I think it just opens it up tremendously. So I think that's going to be a really good thing. So I don't know if it's going to be a surprise, but I think that'll be good for the sport.
That would be incredible. All right, Joy Taylor, you can catch her on The Herd, the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast. She does an Amazon live stream with Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah. I mean, Joy's basically everywhere. She's going to be the big surprise, taking over sports media in 2021.
I'm filling in for you again.
Oh, yes, yes. And filling in for me on Fox Sports Radio when I take a Saturday off randomly to go hiking with my family or do something on a Saturday morning.
We'll have one
Joy,
more
I have to
broadcast.
Say, hey, just between
we'll have one more
you and
broadcast
I,
on Prime Video for a wild card game on January 10th, so you can check us out.
I've worked Saturday mornings for, I think this will be almost 5 years. And somebody said that to me recently, like, holy cow, you've been working Saturday mornings for 5 years. And it hit me and I was like, all right, I got to take a couple off and like live a little bit on a Saturday morning. I know I haven't done that a lot lately, but, and some people are laughing right now, Joy, but you know our business, right? Like,
oh yeah,
it's sports. We're talking about sports. It's not that hard. It's fun.
Yeah, I don't really feel like I mean, I do a lot, obviously, as you mentioned, but like, I don't feel like it's work.
Yeah. It's like watching NBA and NFL and college football talking.
This is what I would be doing anyway. I'm just getting paid to talk about it. So it's great. We're very lucky.
Very. All right, Joy Taylor, thank you so much. And Happy New Year.
Thank you so much for having me on. Happy New Year. Hope you had a great holiday with your family and stay safe.